Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Graham Phillips, who also performs under the pseudonym Tupelo Lime, is a dual British-American national currently living in England. Graham got his original inspiration in the early San Francisco punk days in the early 1980s. Later, making his way to the California mountains, he found himself falling in love with the country blues, folk, and southern rock sounds. He calls Tupelo Lime stripped-back Americana. Graham joins me all the way from England for this edition of Americana Music Profiles, as we talk about his latest music. Good evening, Graham. Thanks for taking the time to join us on the podcast.
Yeah, not a problem. Yeah, it's a beautiful evening here at the moment. It's about still, it's about 75, 80 degrees still here at 7 o'clock at night.
Wow. And I am speaking to you from where? Where are you located?
I am located in the far east of England on the little piece that juts out into the north side, little fishing town called Lowestoft.
Okay, awesome.
And yeah, it's kind of cool up here.
Yeah, so you've got an interesting story. I'm really curious to dive in. You don't have a really strong English European accent. Is that just the way it worked out, or
it's just the way it worked out. I've spent most of my life traveling, so my accent dives in and dives out.
Yeah.
I've got to say, depending on where and who I am.
I guess I reached for that a little bit because I'm reading through your notes. I know that you've spent quite a bit of time in the United States and actually had a different genre of music that you were in for a while in your earlier part of your career. Is that right?
I started out, I'm not one of these who picked up a guitar at the age of 3 years old and went, wow, this is what I want to do.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I have an English father and an American mother.
Okay.
And I was split between the two places. So as soon as I was able to and graduated high school, I headed over to the States and discovered San Francisco and the punk movement that was like really happening there.
Yeah. In the 80s, right? Yep.
And that's when I discovered me. Yeah. In the very early 80s, that's when I discovered music. Really.
Did you have any sort of musical inclinations prior to that? Were you kicking around the guitar?
I mean, you know, a piano.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I'd taken piano lessons as a young kid and was doing some stuff. I was more into dramatic arts than I was, you know, the music. And you know, my intention was always to travel the planet. And so the music wasn't at that point quite high. And then I discovered this whole community of people,
yeah,
who were heavily into do-it-yourself music and that ethos that sits right behind that.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wow, I'm home, man. You know, I was like, yeah, this is so cool.
So how did you get from punk music to alternative country Americana? That's a bit of a stretch.
Well, if you think about where it all happened, not that much. You know, San Francisco in the early 80s, you know, we were still talking about a lot of country-based bands and the Grateful Dead.
Sure, yeah.
I spent, I don't know, 4 or 5 years in San Francisco, and then a friend of mine invited me up to the Trinity Mountains up in California.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And there, I spent 2 years up there, and that was where I discovered real music being made by people, you know, on just acoustic instruments sitting on their porches and on the back of the bar in these tiny little towns of about 50 people that were in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I fell in love all over again. I was like, okay, so this is really, really cool. I actually spent hours listening.
So
they were writing their own stuff and playing traditional stuff. It's very cool.
When did it become something for you that you wanted to get into it professionally from the performance side of things?
Once I'd worked out what it was that was in my head and that music was a way for me to get out, what I decided was actually, if I really need to do this, what I need to do is go travel some more and find out what's out there. And so I spent a long time traveling and listening to music and hanging out with musicians and learning and just figuring out what it was I wanted to do. Uh-huh. And so, as I say, you know, in the end, I came quite late to being a professional musician.
Right.
But I had spent a long time in that apprenticeship process.
Sure. Yeah.
Where you're not quite, but you are, and you're trying to pay dues in life and, you know, and trying to figure out art forms and craft forms and how they all blend. And, you know, so I was picking up guitars and picking up other art forms all along the way and trying to work out how I could put them all together. And then this, you know, sort of this alt-country movement came along.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, for me, that was the moment of revelation or redemption. That was the time when I said, okay, so this is how you express yourself. And at that point, then I decided to make music a career.
Okay. And how long ago was that?
You know, there were artists like 15, 20 years ago.
Okay.
But it took me a long time from that point, you know, to get anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, maybe 25 years ago now.
Okay.
It was a while ago, but you know, that there's Ringo Starr is right. You've got to pay your dues if you want to sing the blues, and you've got to learn.
Yeah.
You know, before you can actually make music. You know, I think there are too many people who just go, oh, yeah, I can be a musician. I can be a pop star and stuff. And there's nothing that sits behind that.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good observation. And it's so true when you listen to the songs. There's when you look at the commercial pop scene, you're right, there's very little depth. You don't get a lot of it's not a lot of storytelling in that kind of music.
Yeah, I have been – you know, all for me, this is all an extension of poetry, which I took up many, many months, you know, right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so for me, this is an extension of that. But I am not the world's greatest guitarist. I am not the world's greatest singer. But what I can do well is write tales that I can put to music.
Yeah,
and alt country and that whole vibe that goes along with it is what I really like.
How long have you been recording?
Recording professionally only a couple of years in reality.
Okay.
I think for a lot of artists, the actual process whereby you become commercial is not something that sits
right
easily.
Yeah.
You know, you're much better off connecting through, you know, whatever your — my partner is an artist. He's a potter, and it's the same thing. You're much better off connecting one-on-one with small groups, and for a musician, that sort of playing gigs and touring, and for an artist, that's just working with people and creating, and not worrying too much about how are you going to make money out of it.
Right. Yeah. Has this something that you've been able to do professionally and make a living at, or do you have other things that you do along the way?
Like I think just about every musician, there are part-time day jobs and just, you know, that pays the way for you to do what you do.
Yeah.
I have not yet reached a stage where I can comfortably live off an income as a musician.
Yeah.
And I suspect that's the same for most musicians in the modern world.
Right. More than not, yes, for sure.
50 years ago, exactly. 50 years ago, you might have been able to do it as a non-famous Spotify.
Yeah.
I'm on Spotify because I have to be. But
yeah, yeah.
Know, it's killed touring musicians.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Do you work in a related field, or is it just kind of you're picking up the odd jobs, whatever you need to do to support
your art?
I
have worked in absolutely everything to support my art form.
Yeah.
You know, I have worked in a car wash. I have worked in kitchens. I've washed dishes. Been a short order cook. It goes on and
yeah,
on. Again, if you talk to a lot of country and alt country musicians, it's the same story.
Sure. Yeah.
You do whatever it is you do
in
order to be able to pay for the honor of making music.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a very eloquent way to put that. So yeah, I agree. barring the present world situation, what does it look like for you when you get out, and what did it look like? And hopefully again soon, when you get out and perform your music, what kind of audiences do you find resonate with what you do? What kind of a venue do you find yourself in most of the time?
Yeah, I lost a whole year's worth of gigging income this year.
Yeah, everybody did. Yeah.
It's really interesting. Most of my audience, although I live in the UK, most of my audience is not in the UK.
It's really? Okay.
Places like Germany and Italy and France.
Huh.
The UK audiences are much more interested in covers overall.
Oh,
okay. And pop type music and metal. So my audience is there. And smaller venues, much more intimate venues, you know, folk club, you know, the smaller type. I'm never going to play, you know, stadium. But, you know, I can make a good income playing small venue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hopefully they will be allowed to reopen soon. I don't know. A long time since I've been home now, but here all the venues are closed. They opened them all up and then they shut them all right back down again.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. And it depends on where you are in the States as to what capacity that open and shut is in, but it seems like it's fairly common worldwide at this point that very few areas are allowing musicians back into play.
Yeah, and especially the smaller venues. You know,
yeah.
And you can, you know, I live right opposite a music venue, which is great.
Yeah.
Because I had a residency there for one thing, but you know, social distancing and all the requirements that are you know, need to be met, you know, means that their music venue side of their business is unviable.
Right. Yeah. It is.
You know, that where they used to pack in, you know, a couple hundred people. They can fit, you know, 40 or 50 now if they maintain social distancing.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And that makes it hard for them to pay. So my latest audience is house concert.
Ah, yeah, yeah. And I think that more and more artists are going to have to go that route. You can get 20 people in someone's backyard or basement and probably still make a little bit of money for the artist, but the fans still just enjoy the music too.
Exactly. And there's a real intimate connection here.
Yeah.
I've just played a very small gig just down the road from here last week. And there were, you know, 16, 20 people there.
Right.
But you get this real intimate validation of what you're trying to do and what they're expecting out of playing in those. And house party gigs are really popular here.
Yeah.
Well, not so much here, but certainly in Europe, they are really popular. That's the latest sort of. I think for smaller, especially for the, you know, the darker side of country, it fits really well.
Sure. Yeah. And the singer songwriter and the kind of the fringe bluegrass, even all of those fit well in house
concerts. You know, and you know, I can bring my friends along to the gig with me if I want to.
Yeah.
It pays, actually, in as much, it pays just as much as the bigger gig does.
Right.
And you get to meet some really cool people.
Yeah, yeah. So you
were interested in music.
Right, because you do is you strip away the people that are just there for the bar. The music is just, it's nice if it's good, but you don't really care. It's not why you're there. So when you do a house concert, you bring the people in that are really interested in the music. And from an artist's perspective, that really gives you a very captivated audience, too.
Yeah, and what really set me off down that route was I saw Blackberry Smoke doing a house gig in Paris.
Really? Wow. Wow, I bet that was great.
Wow, that is that's the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah,
because you really connect with them. You can work with them with the music as an audience member, and the band can work with you as an audience.
Right. Yep. That's a good point.
And something beautiful happens right there. You know that you get something that social media does not give you.
Oh my, for sure. Yeah. You get that extra dimension. You know, social media is fine. It's better than nothing, but it's two dimensional, and you miss that third dimension of the atmosphere and the people and even in distancing, you still have that third dimension going on where you can feel the energy in the room.
Exactly.
So you have a recording. Do you just have singles out right now? Or are you working on a new album project?
Everything got torn apart this year. So currently what I'm doing now is I've just released. I was never into Spotify. I always thought, you know what, I can make a living touring, you know, roughly. So that's where I'm going down. That all changed this year. So I finally gave in and said, okay, everybody expects at least to have Spotify track. So I've just released The Orange Rain onto Spotify. We're going to do one a month. For the next couple of months, we're going to follow that up with an EP.
Okay.
And then we'll follow that with an album. Hopefully by that time, touring will be allowed again. Mm-hmm. And I can use you tour to promote your...
Right.
Your product. You know, this way, maybe this is how we have to use product to promote the touring. We're going to do a series of virtual... pay-per-view gigs with some guest artists.
Oh, good. Okay.
And some of my friends are really interested in doing that. We have to see how that works out. And what are people prepared to pay for a virtual gig as opposed to going for a real one? What does it have to look like?
Right, yeah. Does the EP or record have a name yet?
Not yet. The Orange Rain is out now on Spotify. Then I've got and The Orange Rain is a single. I tend to, like a lot of old country people, I tend to write about social commentary.
Sure.
The Orange Rain is about the effects of and the trauma suffered by vets from the Vietnam War when they were exposed to Agent Orange and the addiction and the homelessness that came out of that. And so The Orange Rain is on now. I'm doing a Carolina Nights, which is a story about the mining industry in North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
Comes out on the 26th on Spotify. That's followed by, we're trying to figure out what that's followed by. That takes us into September. We're doing one about the death of a soldier returning from Afghanistan and then I've got another one about, which is a very personal one, about missing the Deep South and the streets lined with magnolia trees.
Okay, yeah.
And that's so we're still trying to work all the schedule all out. And so all of the part of an E that we're thinking of doing on vinyl as well.
Oh, good, okay.
Vinyl and cassette.
Oh, really? Wow. Are there still cassette manufacturers there, I suppose?
Or something? Oh, yeah, absolutely. And cassette is a growing trend in Europe in particular.
Really?
A lot of the it's again, that, you know, that leads you down the route of that whole DIY ethos.
Sure.
You know, that's like you do it yourself.
Right.
And cassettes are easy for you to replicate at home.
Uh-huh.
You can print your own labels, a bit like CD.
Yeah.
They're easy for you to replicate.
Yeah.
You can print your own. And that, I think, for unsigned, unknown artists, is a way of merchandising your music so that It's accessible to people.
Yeah, you know,
it has to be accessible.
Well, in the world of social media and social connection, it's a whole lot easier to connect with a tribe that you couldn't any other way. You can have a tribe of 100 or 200 or 300 people that really dig what you're doing, even if the mass world wouldn't. And you can then supply them with a CD or cassette of your music, and you can really keep that tribe connected that way. I mean, that's something that's, you know, relatively new in the last 10 years, I guess. So it does open up the world for artists that are beginning and are very alternative and but still allows them to have a stage and a platform.
Absolutely. I write very non-commercial music, and it is never going to be commercially successful. However, social media has allowed me to gain an audience. I've got a big following in the south of Greece.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah.
and I've got an invitation this winter to go on the back of that, to go tour around Athens and the region that is Attica, is down there. And that would never have happened.
Right. Yeah.
10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so for an artist, that is really, really cool.
That's fun.
You know, getting people to engage is
yeah.
The key.
Any plans in the future to get back to the States and play here again?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a good friend of mine who wants to work with me to set up something in the States, and I would love to. You know, Maryland, Virginia, I missed it really bad. I try and get back regularly. Obviously, it's been a while now.
Yeah, yeah.
That whole area, I'd love to get back. I'd love to play some music there. That all depends on transport and planes and,
right. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yes, the idea is that, sometime in the not too distant future, I'd like to come back and spend, a bit more time there making music and remaking some connections that you always get lost when you travel.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Traveling the planet, being a, sort of cross-cultural cowboy, because again, I think in most country musicians we have that cowboy within us. Means that you tend to lose some of the immediateness of being back home.
Sure.
It would be cool.
So if
and that's what Magnolia, and that's what the song Magnolia Rain is about. It's about missing that immediateness.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So if folks want to get in touch with you, want to get some of your music, hear some of your music, make some connections with new fans. What's the best way for all that to happen for you? Best way to get in touch?
The best way for all that, well, there's two ways for all that to happen. One is my website, which is tupelolime.com. That's Tupelo as in the city of Mississippi and lime as in the tree. So tupelolime.com. There's a page there that has music on it. There's another page where you can say, yeah, I'd like to stay in touch, and you can and you can sign up, and I'll stay in touch with you, and or on Twitter, where I am also Tupelo Lime on Twitter. Those are the two best ways.
Yeah.
The website has all the music, and then through that, I have on Bandcamp under Tupelo Lime. I'm a firm believer that people like to see the skeletons of things as well as what it all looks like as a ready-made creature. So on Bandcamp, I tend to keep all the stuff that's work in progress.
Yeah. Cool.
And some stuff is the same stuff. You might see the titles the same on the website as you see in Bandcamp, but in Bandcamp, they sound really different.
Yeah.
That's me trying to work through what they sound like. So
yeah.
I'm more than happy for people to comment and you know, for me, that's part of the audience interaction in a virtual world.
Yeah, good. Well, thank you, Graham. This has been really cool, and getting to know your story and your connection to the music. And we certainly wish for you, as well as all the other musicians, that you can get back out there soon, and wish you the best with your new music as it comes out.
Thank you so much. This has been really cool, speaking to Virginia as well, and speaking to your magazine, which... you know, does a great job of promoting Americana music in general. It's been really, it's been my honor as well.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.